We left off in the middle of the Milchama, so I want to just finish that up before going on to the next topic. So I'll read to finish, and then we will move on to the next topic of the Makoros. Okay. So anyway, the Ramban, we were up to the paragraph which begins Harav Rabbeinu Shmuel Me Ramru, the Rashbam Kosav Shem Baba Basra. That's on the shita about everybody that they all hold that someone who sells something it, and all its a tashmishim, whatever you want to call them, accessories go along with it. So there, he says, the Rashbam says the b'chol makom she'amru b'talmud kulu svira lehu hachi v'hachi tzarech lefarish she'enam shavim b'dineihem v'lamodim zeh lezeh. The Gemara didn't say that they all said davar echad. It said that kulu svira lehu x. Now, if you look, did anybody, by the way, look at the Rashbam? I know that's a recurring theme. I'm going to recur that theme recur all year. The Rashbam doesn't really comment about a shita there, about the gaonic shita. The Rashbam just says, As a way of parshanut of the Gemara, the Rashbam just says that when it says kulu svira lehu, it means they don't exactly agree with one another. When it says amru davar echad, it means they mamish hold the same thing. So the Rashbam doesn't say that the Gaonim hold that we don't pasken like a shita, that we don't pasken like this one, we don't pasken like that one. He doesn't say anything on that. He just is explaining what it means kulu svira lehu as opposed to amru davar echad. That's all that I see in our Rashbam. Tosus also comments there, but again, they don't talk at all about the question of the Gaonic Shita. And he says, "Udvarim elum nirim heim hefach me divrei hamor zal." So he says they seem to be the opposite of the Baal Hamor. Now, I don't know what he. It sounds like he read the Rashbam. Neither the Baal Hamor here nor the Rashbam there talk about their views on the Gaonic Shita. But I think the Ramban read the following. He read the Baal Hamor is saying that it's not a shita when they don't actually agree with one another. In other words, we don't reject them all if they're not agreeing with one another. We only reject them all if they actually hold the same way. And the Rashbam, it sounds like, is saying, the way the Ramban understood, that dafka, because they don't all hold like one another, because kulu svirlu, but it's not amru davrechad, which is why they're rejected. But if it was amru davrechad, then maybe we'd accept it. That's the only way I can understand when he says, dvarim elu nirim heim hefach mi divrei hamor zal. But again, neither one thing is clear, the Baal Hamor does believe that you can paskin like some of the opinions within the Shita that they don't all agree with one another. That's true. That is true. But he doesn't say anything more broadly. In other words, obviously, conceptually speaking, if Amru Davar Echad, if it's a case where all the Shita's Mamish hold the same thing, what can you certainly not do?
Can't separate them.
You can't paskin like one and not like another, right? That you can't do. If they Mamish hold the same thing, then it's a tarte de sastri to pass like one or the other. Now, it doesn't mean that you can't pasken like all of them, but all right, perhaps that's floating in the background and the Baal Hamor knows that. But the Baal Hamor certainly does make clear that if they don't all hold the same thing, then for sure you can pasken like some of them and reject others, which is both a logical possibility, but the Baal Hamor doesn't comment, what do you do with the Gaonic Shita? And the Rashbam doesn't say anything about Pesach. All he just says is that what it means. But that's how the Ramban appears to have taken it. But then the next line, I have to confess, I don't understand in the Ramban. The Ramban says, "V'kol shekein shezeh shita gemura." It's a very funny kol shekein. That our Gemara is a shita gemura. Sha'kol shavin. Now, I'm going to read on further. What does the Ramban say here? That all these opinions are actually in agreement with one another? Is that true? They are, he claims. How are they all in agreement with one another? In other words, Ramban has a very insightful point here, although, again, I don't know how this fits with what he's just said until now. The Ramban says all of these shitos, mamish hold the same thing. What does that mean? Some of them are fairish argument. No. They all understand basukos teshvu shivas yomim somehow means diras keva, not diras arai. Where they differ with one another, if they differ with one another, how do you define Diras Keva? But on the larger question of Diras Keva, Diras Arai, all of these shitos are in agreement, the Diras Keva Be'inan. Now, Incidentally, I would just comment. Yes, Noah?
But we don't categorically reject the idea that sukkah is kava. There are a lot of dinim, like Teshu came to do, for instance, where we do accept some sort of kava nature.
But I don't think he would call that kava. Okay, let me step back and make another comment. When they talk about sukkah diras keva be'inan, this will answer your question. It's a good question. What does it mean that they all hold sukkah diras keva? What does it mean for sukkah to be diras keva? What structurally?
The walls.
If you look at every single one of these dinim, I believe, every single one of them is a din in the walls. Think about it. The curved sukkah, the circular sukkah, the slanted sukkah, the height of the sukkah for Rabbi Yehuda, the number of walls in the sukkah, Rabbi Shimon. What will happen to the schach is always awry, but will the wind be able to blow away the sukkah? That's the walls. What else is there? Because there were six or seven here. Let's see, the size of the sukkah, which is determined by the walls. And what else? Was there another one, or did I get all of them here? Let's see. Tzel. The first one was tzel. The tzel machmas the schach versus the tzel machmas the defanos. Do the defanos actually have to block the sunlight also? Every one of those things is a din in the defanos of the sukkah. You're talking about a din in yeshiva sukkah, right? The ofan yeshiva, how kavua is it? Okay, so maybe that's a little bit different, right? Everybody would agree on some level that yeshiva b'sukkah has to be derech keva, and that the schach of the sukkah has to be derech arai. And the machlokas is about the walls of the sukkah. Morning. You could, let's put it this way. You're correct that you do need, that the dimensions of the sukkah will affect how much schach you need. But if you think about the dimensions of the sukkah, the way we give dimensions, what are the dimensions really for? What? The floors. Well, they are, but when you say a sukkah X by Y, what is that actually describing? It's describing how long the walls are. So I understand. I'm trying to think if you can sort of force the issue by pointing out what happens if you have schach that is kashir. It's going to cut both ways. Well, let me put it to you this way. Boy, this is really slippery. I don't think it's my shendet. I need to think about that a little bit. But it's true that I would say the following: it's true that the dimensions affect the amount of schach that's needed, but they certainly also affect the walls that are needed. So this sheet, when it talks about keva, we can debate. Well, which is it? Why are we really talking about keva? Are we talking about because the walls or the schach? Okay, but certainly every other one is straight the din in the walls. Yes.
Isn't it funny that like the whole nature of sukkah and the name itself has to do with schach, but yet when it comes to all the dinim, they have to do like when it comes to diras keva, it all has to do with the walls.
No. Well, you should ask a different question. Why do you need walls at all? So the answer is. So I think that the answer is that the sukkah by definition means walls as well. Right? It means walls as well. The question is, it is actually probably true. Let's talk about wind and a sukkah. Which part of the sukkah, in other words, if you put schach on top and you tie the schach down, whose strength will determine whether the sukkah is kev or arai? What?
The binding that you used to tie the schach.
No. In other words, the walls or the schach?
The walls.
The walls. Right? If the wind cannot blow the walls, your sukkah is fine. If the wind can blow the walls, but somehow couldn't blow the schach, your sukkah is in trouble. Right? So you can understand why the ofan ha-yeshiva is going to be to determine what the walls are. The real question, the question you can ask, which is, I don't want to say reductio ad absurdum, is if you hold that the sukkah is diras keva be'inan, why doesn't the schach have to be keva? I mean, the answer is a simple one.
The
because then it would be a bias, right? And then it would defeat the whole purpose of the mitzvah. You would just be like, you know, one of the wealthy balabatim in pick your town, fill it in. Who? This is my winter home. This is my summer home. This is my backyard home. You know, because I build structures everywhere. So it's an interesting. It is the more novel. The sharper question is, why would anybody say that a sukkah diras keva beinan? That's really the question. We understand why the schach should be arai. We don't really understand why anybody would say the wall should be keva. Okay. So anyway, the Ramban makes the claim, and I understand the claim that all. I mean, it's a big chiddush. Firstly, the Ramban is clearly betraying himself as a conceptualist here, and one could debate this point. The Ramban is suggest, you know, the way the Ramban says here, it sounds almost as if there's only one makor midaraisa for all of these dinim, and that is whether or not vasukos teishvu shivas yamim, whether that pasuk implies keva or arai. I have a problem with that. Why do I have a problem with that? What's the makor for each of these various dinim? So the truth is, many of them the Gemara doesn't provide a makor, but there's one in which it does. It has many different suggestions. Rabbi Shimon and the Chachamim's machlokas over how many walls a sukkah requires. To the best of my knowledge, the sugya there provides a number of different possible yafusas, but not a single one of them says the machlokas is whether or not you need diras kevar, diras arai. The Gemara will present it as a machlokas yeshem lemikra yeshem lemasores, how do you eat basukos, basukas, and so on. But it's not suggested that the machlokas is over sukkah diras kevah diras arai. Now, you could fit it into some of the shitas, but not all the shitas. In other words, if you say that everybody agrees that there are three walls and the machlokas is of whether the halacha lo moshe misinai is legroa or lehosif, to take away from the third wall or to add on top of that, you could say, what's the mekudas of machlokas about the halacha lo moshe misinai? Well, you could sort of stretch and say that. But I would have argued that that these dinim, not all these dinim stem from the same source. They're simply a bunch of different dinim, all of which contain a certain common thread, but they're not mamish the same, they're not kulon echad. But grant the Ramban's point for the moment. The Ramban we just read said that b'chol shekein shezeh shita gemura she'akol shavin bedina d'diras keva be'inan basuka ukrai b'diras keva mishnamoi. So the Ramban actually wants, what is he really doing here? What is he doing by adopting this approach? What is he undermining? It's a very strange way of formulating it. It's a very strange way of formulating it because he just quoted the Rashbam, who seems to say that kulam amru davar echad means they mamish hold the same thing, whereas kulu svir lehu is they don't agree with one another. The Ramban turns around and says, really, be'emes, they agree. They're all in agreement. They're arguing on details. What does that accomplish for the Ramban in the course of his discussion with the Baal Amor? Well, it makes this shita really not the way the Baal Amor says, but the way, but it makes it like the Davar Echad shita, not with the language. What do I mean by that? If the Ramban is correct that all of these Tanoim agree that midaraisa sukkah diras keva beina, and they're only arguing on the details, then what does that mean, Morty?
We have to reject all of them.
Correct. In other words, it's true. In other words, you have two choices. You either accept all of them, minus the ones that argue with one another. In other words, you have to pick either Beis Shammai or Rebbe, because they clearly argue. You have to pick either Rebbe Hu or Rebbe Shimon in terms of the number of mechitzos. Everybody say that. Basically, those two, you have to pick one. But either you paskin like every other one plus one of those, or you paskin like none of them. Because if you say that we hold that a sukkah only requires two plus walls, because sukkah diras arai be'inan, then you cannot paskin like any shita that holds sukkah diras kera. Why? Because they all derive fundamentally from the same source. Basukos teishu shivas yamim, either it means diras kera, or it means diras arai. Once you say that we read the pasuk as diras arai, you must reject every single position in this list. If you want to read the pasuk as holding diras keva, then essentially you must hold like every sheet in this list, except for you have to pick either Rebbe or Beis Shammai because they differ in a detail. So he's basically, you have to ignore the Rashban that he just quoted. He's attacking the Baal HaMor on the grounds of saying, you Baal HaMor want to say, listen, I'm allowed to pick and choose different shitos of the shita, provided that they disagree with one another. I can accept some and reject others. The Ramban says, this shita, everybody, ekroni, agrees with one another. They all hold that you read the pasuk, kasukah diras keva be'inan. Once you reject one of them on the grounds that you don't read the pasuk that way, you must reject every single one. So says the Ramban. So you have to realize, to read the Ramban, you have to ignore the Rashban that he just cited before. And again, I don't know what the Rashban actually holds. You might not disagree with the Ramban. No?
So is the masloch here between the Ramban and the Baal HaMor how we understand what a shita is?
For sure.
So it seems like the Ramban is saying, like, when we have a shita, or at least in this instance of having a shita, it means that all of them are really interconnected by one.
I would formulate the Ramban's position this way. Number one, you're wrong. Number two, even if you're right, you're wrong.
What do I mean?
It means, number one, you're wrong. Even when a shita quotes those different shitos that disagree with one another, we reject all of them. You can't paskin like some of them. Even when they're in disagreement with one another. Number two, even if you were right on that point, that it's only called a shita when they mamish say the exact same thing, and thus rejecting one means rejecting all, nonetheless, this is a case of a shita that they all hold the same thing. But the Baal HaMor points out they disagree with one another. No, they disagree in a detail. They all agree how you read the pasuk, and they disagree with the other Tanaim who read the pasuk the other way. So there's only one way to read the pasuk, either diras keva, diras arai. Once you want to say that the pasuk has to be read as diras arai, you must reject every single shita in this list, because every single view in this list, every single shita in this shita, starts with the assumption that the pasuk is to be read as sukkah diras keva be'iman. Yes, Rebbe and Beis Shammai disagree on how to implement that in real life, but once you say that you're rejecting the whole notion of sukkah diras keva be'iman, once you say that a sukkah can be square around, and once you say that the walls don't have to block the sunlight, and once you say that a sukkah needs only 2+ walls, etc., 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 you must reject every single opinion in this list, because you are basically saying sukkah diras arai be'iman. You can't even pasuk like one of them. What is the only way you could possibly paskin like a member in this list? There's only one way. The Rif did it.
They all hold Diras Keva Be'inan, and that they agree on what Diras Keva Be'inan is?
No. Had the Rif reject it? Had the Rif accept the cut selectively?
You don't explain the opinion under...
You claim Abai is wrong, that the basis of those opinions is not dependent upon Sukkah Diras Keva.
If it is Diras Keva, they do disagree.
Then you have to reject every one. You can't agree with one and disagree with another. Okay.
That's because within those opinions, there is an internal disagreement as to Diras Keva. Between Rabbi Yehuda and who did you say it was?
No, there is some machlokas within the shitos. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda again, there are two clear cases where one member of the shita doesn't hold like another member of the shita, another shita in the shita, except for one of them is definitional, one of them is just by chance. In other words, Rabbi Beis Shammai and Rebbe disagree definitionally. They argue, they both agree the sukkah diras keva be in its dimensions, but they argue what defines dimensions that are keva. Rabbi Yehuda happens to reject Rabbi Shimon's position about the number of walls. How do we know that? How do we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds that you don't need 3+ walls in a sukkah like Rabbi Shimon? The Rabbi Yehuda of the 20 Amos doesn't hold like Rabbi Shimon of the number of walls. How do we know? How do you know? What does one have to do with the other? I repeat, how do we know that Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai, who believes that a sukkah can be told in 20 Amos because sukkah can be diras keva, how do we know that he disagrees with Rabbi Shimon, who says you need 3+ walls in a sukkah because it's diras keva? How do we know that Rabbi Yehuda holds you only need 2+ walls? It's not definitional, it's incidental. How do we know? Because Rabbi Yehuda in the first Mishnah comes to disagree with the Chachamim. The Chachamim say 4 things in the first Mishnah. The Chachamim say that the following sukkos are psulos.
3 walls above 20 amos.
Above 20 amos, doesn't have 3 walls, doesn't have more shade than sun, that was the 3 or 4 things. Did I make it on one? What?
I think it was
Three, okay. And Rabbi Yehuda only disagrees on one, which means that Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim on the other two. What's that? Oh, sorry, it's Vacham, right. Okay? Rabbi Yehuda, by silence, clearly Rabbi Yehuda agrees with the Chachamim once you have three walls, which means two plus. Rabbi Yehuda agrees that it's good. Now, we don't know that. It's not, so again, it's not that the 20 Amos Shita and the 3.5 wall Shita are mutually exclusive. Right? In other words, you could have hold both. You could hold the Sukkah's good above 20 Amos and that it needs 3 plus walls.
It just happens to be
they don't. We don't know why Rabbi Yehuda doesn't hold that way. But Beis Shammai and Rebbe definitionally disagree. They're arguing at the same exact same point. Right? The Sukkah, when you set dimensions for Sukkah as Diras Keva, it's got to be one or the other. Can't be both. Okay. Fine. So just to step back for one moment, and I want to stress the Nekudas HaMachlokas. Both the Baal HaMor and the Rif agree about the Psak Halacha in the Shita. In other words, they both agree that we hold like Rabbi Eliezer of the Mishnah by a sukkah that you made commits Rif. And they both agree that a sukkah must be 7x7 Tvachim. It has to be Rosh HaVeruah V'Shulchanah. They both agree. Question is, why? What are they arguing about then? You can tell me what they argue about Lamaisa, in fact, but really, why are they reading? What are they struggling over in terms of this Shita on Dav Zayin? What are they struggling over? What is the fight really about? Who cares whether you offer a different reason? Who cares whether you offer a different reason for a couple of the opinions, and that's why you paskin like them, because otherwise it would be a shita and you can't paskin like it. And who cares if you just say sometimes you can paskin like select opinions in a shita? Why does it matter? Again, the Rif says, why do we paskin like Beis Shammai in the shita and like Reb Lezer? Because we disagree with Abayi's explanation. They don't belong in the shita. Why does the Baal HaMor say you paskin like Reb Lezer and like Beis Shammai? Because you don't have to reject every opinion in certain kinds of shitas, right? Is that a fair summary? What's at stake? Why does that lead to a difference? I mean, academically, it's different. Ah, the Gaonic view on shitas and so on. Okay, very nice. Very nice. It's very nice, but it's theoretical. Why does that lead them? What's at stake in this?
There must be somewhere where it says that we don't want like a shita.
No, we know that that's what the Gaon's position is. The Gemara in Ezer Nesha, the Ramban quoted, that we read at the end of yesterday. So, Morty?
To some extent, it's to what extent do we reject the Shita of Diras Keva?
Again, but you're not, it's not an afkamina. It's not an afkamina. So let me help you answer this question. What in practice is an afkamina between the Baal HaMor and the Rif? There is a nafkamina that emerges. What is it, Noam?
Whether or not their opinions are based on Yikzera.
That, well, you didn't say it. No, that's not a nafkamina. That's just describing the machlokas, right? Whether or not the reason behind Sukkah Gedola is Gzera, behind Sukkah Katan is Gzera, or it's a Diras Keva. That's just describing the machlokas. Why is that crucial, Morty?
It's a machlokas whether or not we pass in like
based on which is not in the Shita, right? Sukkah Gedola is not in this discussion in the Shita. The Machlokas is whether we paskin like Beis Shammai to Sukkah Gedola. How does that emerge from this? Why is what the Rif and the Baal HaMor say crucial for that understanding? For the Rif, by explaining within Beis Shammai in the Shita that it's not about Siras Keva, but it's about Exera Shema Yimashach HaShachono, what conclusion does that then lead him to about the Machlokas Beis Shammai Beis Hillel? That the machlokas by Sukkah Gedola and by Sukkah Katana are one and the same. And therefore, since we know we pass like Beis Shammai by Sukkah Katana, how do we know that? Sugin the Mesechta. Everybody agrees to that. Starting with Ritual Rayitzim and Dakil. So once you pass like a by Sukkah Gedola, Katana, you have to pass by Sukkah Gedola. For the Baal HaMor, the crucial point is that the reason why Beis Shammai passes a Sukkah Katana is because it's a Diras Arai. There, and how do we paskin? By a Sukkah Katana.
Again, we don't know for sure how we pass the Sukkot Katan. For sure, like Beis Shammai. But just because we pass the Beis Shammai, Beis Sukkot Katan by the Shir, what does it have to do with the Mishnah or the Hafes? With the Machlokes, it's about a Zera. And hence the Baal HaMor says, where the Gemara says we pass like Beis Shammai, we pass like Beis Shammai. But the Machlokes later has nothing to do with this Machlokes. So on what grounds do you have the right to pass like Beis Shammai? On what grounds? Gemara doesn't say so. Rosh Yitzchok's talking about Sukkot Katan. The Nekudas HaMachlok, the Machlokes by Sukkot Katan, of Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Beis Sukkot Gadol are two totally separate machlokas, according to Baal HaMor. And therefore, there's no justification for passing like Beis Shammai, Beis Sukkot Gadol, just because the Gemara says we pass like Beis Sukkot Katan. But for the Rif, where the two reasons are the same in both machlokos, now you understand if you pass like him by one, you pass like him by the other. Now, that leads me, that summary, and again, I mention that point because it's crucial to think what's driving the Rishonim. What's driving the Rishonim in the Pesach Halacha is how you read the Gemara here. How you read the fact that we pass it like Beis Shammai even though he's in the Shita. Do you say like the Baal HaMor that you can pass it like some Shitas in a Shita if they don't all agree with one another? Or do you say like the Rif that it must be for a different reason? And the only reason available to pass it like Beis Shammai by Sukkot Katana is the exact same Zera. But that's why when you get to the last part of the Ramban, you read the following. Ela sheyesh mi talmidei rabbeinu ma'aririn al mashakosav zal b'perak hayoshen tehalacha kebeis shammai b'tarvayu b'gdolo v'ketana v'omrim, and they say, they tie against the Rif who paskin later also like Beis Shammai. The af agav the kaimalan kebeis shammai b'sukkah ketana mishum d'shchiach l'migzer shemini mashach achar shulchano me'achar she'ein makom b'sukkah sheyim shoch ha'shulchano lo. The Ramban is assuming here, the people tining, that the Talmidim HaMa'arim are tining, where is it more shaykh to make a gzera on Shema Yimashaykh? Sukkah Katana, Sukkah Gedola? Katana. Why? Because there's no possible way to bring the Shulchan to you. The only thing that could happen is you go to the Shulchan. Right, Sukkah Gedola, who says that you're going to meet him Shachar Shulchano? Maybe you're sitting down already, you'll put your Shulchan to you, into the Sukkah. So it's more shaykh to make the gzera by Sukkah, they say, by Sukkah Katana. And he pulls the shulchan to him. The Ramban says because the reason is the same. And they argue, I would even say, in the same Mishnah about both of them, you go one way or the other. You either paskin like Beis Shammai in both cases, or like Beis Hillel in both cases. It's either psul in both cases, or it's ksher in both cases. So that's the machlokas harishonim. There are a lot of rishonim who hold we split the psach. I haven't looked in the Shulchan Aruch yet. Does anyone know how the Rambam paskins? What? Do you know that because you're guessing that, or because you looked in the Rambam?
Because you told us yesterday. I know it because the Rambam said so. I trust the Rambam.
Why?
He's an untrustworthy guy. He's always lied to me.
So I don't think I could have said it yesterday because I don't think I'd checked the Rambam. I've been through the Rambam, but I wasn't thinking about this issue when I learned through the Rambam a month ago. The Rambam paskins like both in separate places. In the beginning of Hilchos Sukkah, in the first parak, whichever it is, Vav or something like that, Hey or Vav, there. Or Dal, I don't remember which parak it is. There, in the dinim of the construction of the sukkah, the Rambam just says it has to be Shiva Tvachim al Shiva Tvachim, which is Rosh Hashanah B'Shulchano. Later, when he talks about the mitzvah Yeshiva Sukkah, he says that it's usur if you sit to sit that way. And he says, he uses very interesting lashon, which will be now our excuse to turn our attention to the next topic. Ke'ilu lo kiya mitzvah sukkah. Or ke'ilu lo yatsa. A funny expression, right? So which now is an excuse. So the Rambam paskins that way. I haven't checked the Shulchan Aruch. My bet is that I don't want to bet. My bet is, it's a good question. You know, not looking. The reason why it's a good question is because the real crucial question, I didn't look. Let's take a minute to look now, so you find it first. How does the Rush paskin? Like the Rif or like Tosfos? Hold on one second. I know how the Shulchan Aruch is going to paskin. I want to know whether or not the Beis Yosef is. I want to know how the Tor paskin first.
Yeah,
So the Rush sounds like he paskins like Tosos. On a very quick read, he rejects the riff. He rejects the riff, which means so you have to check the Torah. It just means the Beis Yosef is going to be forced to discuss it. Of course, I'm assuming the Beis Yosef is going to paskin like the Rambam. Why? Because of the Rambam and the riff against the Rush. Right. Okay, fine. Morty?
How do we conceptually understand the Balaam Moore's opinion anyway? Like, how could we say Sukkot Dirus HaRaivainan, but in this way it needs to be Keva?
So I think the Balaam Moore would say that there is no over... In other words, when Abayi points out that precisely because they don't agree with one another, they're not in agreement. In other words, everybody agrees, by the way, that you need a certain amount of kviyas for sukkah. Right? Meaning, as Tosas points out, he wanted to explain why is it that if the sukkah is less than... or the Ravid on the sukkah on Rav Chanan bar Rava, right? When the sukkah is so small and so tall, why is it no good? So it's Tosfos calls a loshul tarnagolim, and the Ravid says, "Well, choshesh that you're going to really build it so arai." So what do you mean? It's okay arai? No, there's keva, there's arai, and there's really arai, which really means it's just a spectrum. It's all a spectrum, right? The Balaam Moore would not say that people. First, let me add a further point here. Anyway. The Ramban makes it sound like the Torah basukos either has to be kevarai, but where's the one place that the Gemara has a drasha about sukkah being diras kevarai? Where there's a pasuk? Well, not teshu, but basukos teshu shavas yamim. Does that pasuk, according to anybody, say that you need a sukkah to be a diras keva? No, it only says you're allowed to be a diras keva. In fact, it's not clear to me who reads the pasuk. It's clear the chacham read the pasuk. They read it has to be a sukkah that's only ru'uya, in some sense, for 7 days. So I would just say that there's no makar, no pasuk that says diras keva be'idan. Really, the question is, for most of the shitos, how arai can the sukkah be? So it's really just it's a spectrum. That's a good question. What would the Balaam Moore say about that? Your argument that it's definitional, not situational.
Seemingly, according to that Gemara.
Right, as Gemara doesn't distinguish what kind of sukkah. I hear.
You may say that's definitional, but you can't pretend that thing is completely awry. You have to have some feature to point to and say, oh, look, it's Keva.
That's according to Rabbi Yehuda, though. Rabbi Yehuda's the odd one out in this respect.
Well, we pointed out that that's the source, really, for Sum Rabbi Yehuda holds that Sukkah Diras Keva Be'ina, not just that Sukkah Diras Keva allowed.
Unless it's not.
Well, otherwise then we don't have a really good source that Yehuda holds Sukkah Diras Keva Be'ina, because the first sugya only tells you that he allows it. The sugya Mita, if that is Rabbi Yehuda Shita, would suggest that he actually mandates it.
No, that's my point. If we say that it's not that he mandates it, he just considers it definitionally to be Keva, it doesn't mean everyone else considers it to be like that.
No, but Morty's question is, I'm arguing that there's no such thing really as a conceptual point of Keva versus Arai. It's all a spectrum. It's all a spectrum. So Morty's question is, no, it's very much conceptual, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that by definition, a bed under a sukkah is called by definition Diras Keva.
Who says Beit Shammai
says that? I know, but once one shita and the shita holds that way, it gives support for the Ramban's view that there's a notion of a definition of Diras Keva. That's why. Okay. Yehuda? Correct. He says like Tosis.
Right,
exactly. I mean that you split the psak. Yeah, we found it.
Because he thinks the reason is different.
Because he thinks that the reason is not Hashem and Yimashe.
And he gives a proof.
Right, he gives a proof. I'm not sure the proof's so convincing, but it's kind of his own drasha on a hekesh in the Braisa. Okay, fine. All right, so now I want to talk about the question that emerges from the language of the Mishnah, and I would say, and the comments of Tosos. Tosfos is grappling. Tosos and Brachos and Tosos here do not say quite the same thing. But Tosfos here is grappling with the problem with the Gemara and Brachos that I mentioned. If you remember the Gemara and Brachos I mentioned, I think a couple of days ago, So the Mishnah has a machlokas beis Shammai beis Hillel in the way you're supposed to read how you're supposed to read Kriyat Shema, meaning lying down, sitting up, standing, and so on. And the Gemara Brachos states that Rabbi Tarfon says, I once followed beis Shammai shita. On the way, I lied down to say Kriyat Shema, and I endangered myself. And they told him, the Gemara quotes a machlokas, Tani de Bei Rabbi Yecheskel, I think, who says that if you do like Beis Shammai, Im Asa ke Beis Shammai Asa. It's valid post facto. And Rabbi Yosef says, no, Im Asa ke Beis Shammai La Asa. And then the Gemara quotes a proof. The Gemara quotes a proof, and they quote our Mishnah on Daf Chav Ches. So the question is, the question is, how do you see that from the Mishnah? How do you see from the Mishnah that im asa ke beis Shammai, lo asa? So Rashi made a comment, but it's not a sufficient comment. Rashi said, im asa ke beis Shammai, in that Mishnah, according to beis Shammai, if you followed beis Hillel, what have you accomplished? In the Mishnah on Chav Ches, what?
Nothing.
You're not Yotze. Or you accomplished nothing. Lo asa. So too, in a case where, let's say Beis Hillel would hold that what Beis Shammai's Shita is not valid, you're not Yotze, so you wouldn't be Yotze when you follow Beis Shammai. Obviously, if you follow Beis Shammai in a situation where Beis Shammai is the Machmir, so what's Shayach to talk about? Not Yotze. Yes, no.
The problem, though, is the case in Bracho is a case where Beis Shammai is more Mekil. Or more Machmir, sorry.
Correct.
So the Rashi is very out of context.
Right, so in other words, how does that prove it? And there's the point when I want to go further and say it's not just that they're more Machmir. According to Beis Hillel, supposing it happened to come nightfall and you were lying down by chance, you lie down in bed to read a book. And now time for Kriyat Shema. Do you have to sit up?
No.
According to Beis Shammai, if you were sitting in your lazy chair and reading, you have to lie down. But if you're lying down, everybody agrees that you can read Kriyat Shema that way. Beis Shammai holds you have to read Kriyat Shema that way. Beis Hillel says, not a problem. And if you happen to be standing during the morning, during Kriyat Shema, and you read Kriyat Shema, there's no obligation to stand, according to Beis Hillel, dafka to sit down so you don't look like it. No. So it's very hard. By definition, for Beis Hillel, it would seem, if you do like Beis Shammai, you're not doing like Beis Hillel. So if you actually look, however, at Tosfos, in Brachos, he says the following. Now, I don't know what Tosfos and Sukkah would say because he doesn't really address the Brachos case. But he says the following. Al-Korch al-Kain perish harav Rabbeinu Shmaya, the kamadame hochi, the comparison here is mid the ka'amar lo, or mid the ka'amru, lo ki yamta, afal gav de min hadin yotza, sharei berosha v'ruva besucha, eno el aso gzera shem imashach ha-shochana. The Gemara, even though it's only Nisad Rabbanan, but they say to him, Lo kiyamta, you weren't mekayim it, ki haigavne gabe kriyashma, af al gav de min hadin yotza b'di'eved, kevon de lebeis hillel, einochon kidi'isa b'masnisan, kidai ha'yisa lacha ba'atzmacha, den im asa kebeis shamai, lebeis hillel lo asa v'lo klum. So, what is Tosfos saying here? It's kind of astounding, actually. It's a remarkable claim Tosfos is making. According to Beis Hillel, the way Tosfos claims, supposing that it came the morning, you were sitting down, and you were sitting down for your Tzor and Avarabah, and comes Kriyat Shema, and you say, Ah! Oh, Uvikumecha! And you stand up. Are you Yotze according to Beis Hillel? No?
According to Tosfos, it would seem
according to Tosfos, it would seem not. Right? Now, this is a Chiddush. This is a Chiddush because there's no Isser according to Beis Hillel. There's no Isser according to Beis Hillel to stand during Kriyat Shema. Right? But it's a Chiddush. In other words, if you did like Beis Shammai, we would somehow pass it. Now, I'm not... Yes?
Where is the
be completely against that, though. Because the Gemara with, I forget which rabbis it was, it said they only stood up, they only didn't follow Beit Shammai's opinion to show that wasn't the halacha. Not because it would have been
halacha. Right, so the previous Gemara, and the great line, where you have two Tanaim, one was Rabbi Yishmael, I think. Oh, I just closed it. One is Rabbi Yishmael, and one was, I don't think it was Rabbi Eliezer, he's a Shamuti, so.
I think it was Rabbi Eliezer.
Right, okay. Rabbi Yishmael and Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah. So it came, Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. Rabbi Yishmael was lying down at the mirror, Rabbi Eliezer ben Azariah was sitting up. When they reached Ban Kriya Shema, Rabbi Eliezer lay down, and Rabbi Yishmael sat up. Amar Rabbi Eliezer, he says to him, you know what a mashal is like? Someone says to you, nice beard. And what do? You yil mashchisim, you shave it off. Like, what kind of business? You were sitting up already, which would lead Beis Shammai's preferred position. I sat up, so now you're going to sit down? So Rabbi Yishmael says to him, ani asiski de reisila, and ata asiski de reishamai, v'lo oda l'shema yura talmidim yikbu alach ha'ledoros. So the truth is, it's ambiguous. The two different reasons point in two different directions. He says, "Ani asisi kidivrei Beis Hillel." Right? He went out of his way to show, not just for the Talmidim, but he actually sat up. So Kriya Shema Shel Arvis is not b'shachbacha, not lying down. So the two halves of the statement actually send two different messages in that regard. But it is difficult, you know.
I thought that was really a hint to Tosfos Chiddush both in Brachot and here. That Tosfos saying that this is that there is some sort of like meta, like Yizera Derabanan about. With that has this chashash about messing up the halacha ledorim.
No, but no. By Rabbi Yochanan Choranis, it's a concern that he's going to mess up his specific mitzvah. With Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, and Brachos, it's a concern that the Talmidim are going to think that the halachas you actually have to lie down for Kriya Shema Shel Arvis. That's why Rabbi Shmuel sat up to demonstrate no, there is no such mitzvah. That's all. So Tosus here in Sukkah, let's take a look. I don't know if he really, to what extent he's disagreeing, but he writes, Mihu, can someone to read, please? Noam. Mihu, the last part of Tosfos.
Mihu, Shematzin dehatzam tema hechi dayak mina de'asak bin shamay loas v'lo klum. Deraya demaiti de'asak bin telomayri.
Right.
Ve'od, v'chi tzarech raya al zeh hecha de'alacha kibet helo, she'em asa kibet shamay lo'asa v'lo klo.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's obvious. So v'tzarech lomar.
V'tzarech lomar, di'itztri chatam li'tuye hecha de'bet helo machmir midrabanan, v'bet shamay mukmi la'adiraita.
V'lo gazrin, an? V'im, or im.
Im asa kidibri bet shamay lo yata yidei chavato, afilu de'araita. Kida ashechan l'bet shamay, Hecha diyatib apitcha dimitalalta di gazri shama yimshach achar shulchanam. Vikamri lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah yinecha. Nafilu midiraita lo kiyam. Umi debet shamai nishma lebetil.
Right, so it doesn't really answer the next step, the question, but according to Beis Hillel, even if you do like Beis Shammai, you yotzi there. But Tosfos basically says that the purpose of the Gemara was to observe that just as according to Beis Shammai, you're not yotzei b'diyeved because of the Gzeira d'Rabbanan. Similarly, if you had a case where Beis Hillel was gozer midrabbanan, Beis Shammai felt no need to make Gzeira, you would not be yotzei. Which, by the way, would create some interesting possibilities, which is that pig sadin b'tzitzis. So what's the din again? Sadin is made of pishtim, and tzitzis are made of, well, one of them at least has to be wool. And Beis Hillel says you're not allowed to wear tzitzis on them. Why? Whatever. Well, you are allowed. Mitzah chatnis you are, because I say dochalos. I say, but we're afraid. So slayla or something like that. So if that's the case, so what happens if in fact you went ahead and you put tzitzis on the beged and you wore it according to Beis Hillel? According to Tosfos, what?
Would be yotze.
Which should then lead to another conclusion. You're over the lo sase, because you're not mekayim the mitzvah sase. It's only sase docha lo sase, otherwise it would be a lav. So it should be, Tosfos is really correct, which
is not agreed upon by many other Rishonim, it should be that you should get Malchus for that if you want. Even though the Issur is the Rabbanon for putting it on, what if this, if the Issur the Rabbanon means the Chachamim Amafkiah the Kiyum Aseh, Amafkiah the Kiyum Aseh, so then there's no Kiyum Aseh, in which case it's just a lav, and you're violating Shabbos. You're not being the kind of mitzvah. Yeah?
Can it be just like you're not mekayim it, but there's no like, so you're not really over a, like a
lot. No. If you are not actually mekayim it, the daraisa, you're violating a los aseh.
So is the, there's no, it's not like a dinim like the chepta tzitzis that it has to be made out of certain material in order to be considered tzitzis?
No, it does.
Right, so why is it, it's an Isser Gavra that the person who's wearing this has to be kind of mitzvah in order for him to be to not be over the Isser? It doesn't have to do with
so that's an interesting question you ask. The following question, the Rishonim, I think, discuss it, but I don't remember. I think they discuss it. I remember what it said. According to Beis Shammai, can a woman wear such a beged? This is a good place to test what you hold when we use the term. There's a kiyum aseh, even though there's a chiyum aseh, there's a kiyum aseh, it's a good place to test it. Yes, Noam?
Well, in the abs, no, because there's no kiyum during night, but it seems.
No. Okay. Nobody fulfills a mitzvah then. There's no, but during the day, according to most shitas, there is one shita in the Gemara that woman is chayavah sin tzitzis. One of the Tanaim, Amon Amaram used to put tzitzis on the begadim of all his family members. But assuming not like that, can a woman put, is it permissible for a woman? So that might depend upon this, the way you're formulating it, focused on the cheftza or, you know, the person, what they're doing. But I would say if the Chachamim said, again, if they had the power to be mafkia, then, you know.
What exactly is being mafkia?
What's that?
What exactly is
it? Would work better, but by the way, if it's a chefza than a gavra, right. then a pa'ula, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So anyway, so the question that I want to address really is to introduce you very briefly, because this raises some very interesting and complex questions about the scope of the Chachamim's power. I don't mean... there are those people in this world who think that rabbis are on a power trip. There are some rabbis who are on a power trip, but most rabbis I know are actually not on power trips. When we talk about rabbinic power and authority, we're not talking about someone on a power trip. We're talking about simply what is the actual nature of the legal system. In other words, what powers does the Torah grant the Chachamim, not over people, but over determining the law in effect? So, to take, you know, I would say an extreme example. No, it's a different topic. So the question I would say is the following. When the Torah formulates the law in a certain manner, what power did the Chachamim have in reference to those things? The most obvious usage, which is not controversial, is the Chachamim's ability to prohibit that which the Torah permits. That's not interesting. Why is that not interesting? That not so interesting? It's important, but it's not interesting. Because guess what? I can also prohibit what the Torah permits. The Torah says I'm allowed to eat venison. I decide I'm not eating venison. Either as a neder or not, just because I choose not to. In other words, you can almost always be machmer. That's not psak halacha. That's just convenience, scarediness, or something like that. Or caution, whatever you want to call it. The question really is, to what extent, the next step is, to what extent do the Chachamim have the ability to permit things that the Torah prohibits, or to have you not do things that the Torah demands, positive and negative. And then the last step, which is the most interesting one on some level, I think, is to what extent do rabbinic decrees have an impact in determining things on a Torah level. We might formulate it as to what extent do dinim derabbanon affect a chalos midaraisa? For example,
if you have a kiddushin that is performed in the presence of Edom who are psulim midrabanan, to what extent the Chachamim's decree determine that these people are not married at all? For example, if a person is Mekadesh, an Isha with Chametz, in the sixth hour on Erev Pesach, where Chametz is Asar Bana Midrabanan, is the woman Mekudeshet? I'll answer that question for you. The answer is she's not. So the question is, to what extent do the Chachamim have the power to affect a Chalos, to change the status of a Chalos, based upon their say-so? Now, that is, whenever you deal with these cases, you have to be careful, because it's complicated. Why? Because it is possible that sometimes a rabbinic decree affects a din d'oraisa by changing the mitzvahs. Let me give you an example. There's a din of shvuas ha'edus. If I am witness to information, I'm witness to an act, that by coming to court and testifying with another person who exists already, someone else saw it, we will cause Yair to have to pay money to Morty. But because Kesser and I, one of us, refuses to come, Yair will not have to pay, and he costs more any money. So that's a bad thing, that's usher to do. When you have information that's relevant to the court, an halachic court, that will help one party, a subpoena is not necessary to mandate that you testify to that Torah. You're obligated to testify, period. But supposing I deny knowing any testimony to Morty, and I take an oath to it, that's called a shvuas ha'edus. And if I take a shvuas ha'edus, saying that I don't know any testimony, and my testimony, in fact, would have helped Morty's bottom line, I am chayav to bring a carbon ola b'yareh known as a shvuas, for shvuas ha'edus. Okay, fine. If, in fact, my shvua would not have been useful to Morty, if my testimony would have been useful, I'm not chayav a carbon ola b'yareh shvuas ha'edus. According to some tanan, I'm not chayav any carbon. It's just a shvuas sheker. I said I did a test, in other words, if I lied, it's just, but I didn't cost Morty any money, it might be a shvuas sheker, but I don't bring a carbon edus. Carbon shvuas edus. Why? You only bring a carbon shvuas edus when your testimony actually would have impacted it. Thus, let's say Kesser didn't see anything, only I did, and Morty is mashviya me to come to Bezdin and testify against Yair. Since my testimony is not enough to make Yair pay, therefore, I'm pater from shvuas edus. I might be chayav on a shvuas bitur, that's not our discussion. Let's say for the moment, the aide who swears falsely to not testify is only pasul mid the rabbanon. He's in the Sakhi Pekuvia. March Madness is coming up in a few months. So I'll preempt it with Musa now. You're not supposed to be involved in betting March Madness. Probably Bittel Torah to watch too, but if we were to be Tofer separated in Bittel Torah, we'd all be Mavasa Torah. But gambling is wrong. Okay, so let's say you're a habitual gambler. You're mesachet v'kuvi on a regular basis. Midaraisa, you share, you crush your fredus. Midarabanan, you pasul fredus. So my question is the following. If you are then one of two people who saw that Yair took money from Morty and hasn't paid back, and you swear falsely that you don't know any testimony, do you have to bring a carbon for shuas edus? The answer to the question is no. Why not? Against your apostle Freitas. But the psul is only the Rabbanon. Midoraisa, you're a kosher aid. So why are you pater on shvuas aid if it's a chiyuv min haTorah? That when you take an oath falsely denying knowing testimony for someone, when your testimony could have gained them money, you're chayav to bring a korban. Now the Rabbanon pasul you, and now you take the false oath. Why are you pater from the korban? No?
Your testimony would not have affected the money of the case.
Correct. This is a case where a gzeir de rabbanon has an impact on a Daraisa level. Because the bottom line is, the person who's possible with the Rabbana for Eidos is not costing Morty any money by refusing to testify. Because what if he said, yeah, I know testimony, and walks into Beis Din, Beis Din will say, goodbye, you're a Misachi Pekudya, have a nice day, we don't want to see you here again. So Morty wouldn't lose any money. Now, if that aide says, I don't know any testimony, he swears, it might be a Shua Sheker. Maybe a Shua Zvika, but it's not a Shua Seidos. Because he's not high on a Shua Seidos. Because his refusal to give the testimony and his lying about it did not cost Morty anything. Because had he come to court and said, yes, Maron Rabosa, I'm prepared to testify, they would say, no, thank you.
Was he lying, though?
He was lying.
But he didn't have Shua Seidos.
What's that?
Yes.
So if the guy said to him, come to court and testify that you saw, you're borrowing money from me, and he said, I swear I never saw such a thing. If he said, I swear I have no useful edus for you, that might be a Shua sentence.
Okay.
Right? But normally the way the Shua is typically taken is, I don't know what you're talking about, never saw.
And she saw something. What did he see that made him...
He saw your ear. He saw your... You and he, whoever the he is, saw your ear borrow $100 from Morty, and then saw him later say, Morty said, give me the money, your ear said, I don't know what you're talking about, never borrowed money. And if he said, you know the rule is when someone asks you for money to pay them back, and you say, I never borrowed the money, and he didn't come forward and say you borrowed the money, you know what the din is. You have to pay. And you can't say, I paid him back. Why? What? If it weren't for the denial, you can say, Morty lent the money, yeah, you can see it, and I did, I borrowed the money, a friend of Adam, I paid you back. Only with the shtar do you need to do it, or you need to get the shtar. But the Aloba and Milwal Peh, with Adam, you don't need to pay back in front of Adam. But once you say, Lo Lavisi, in front of Adam, it's Omer Lo Parati Dami, right? So I asked you to come to court, Kesser, but Morty asked you to come to court with this other aid, and testify that you borrowed the money from him, and all, later said, Lo Lavisi. And you say, I don't know any such information. I swear. What he says, the other aide says, he swears. So the answer, so the halacha is, he's patur on Shua Seidos, carbon Shua Seidos. Why? Because even though he's lying, even though it might be a Shua Sheker, his testimony would not have helped one. So sometimes a Dinta Rabbanon creates a halos midaraisa because it changes the physical reality in this case. The issue is, will it cost Morty money? And the answer is no. Okay. So but what we're really interested in, and that's the chiddush here in this case, and I want to explore a lot of the issues in between, what we're really interested in this case is whether or not the chachamim, I did a mitzvah sukkah. Did I do the mitzvah properly min haTorah? The answer is yes. I sat in the sukkah, I ate in the sukkah. Ah, but your shulchan was in the bayis, and you're not supposed to do that because shema yimashech ha-shulchano. Okay, so a lot of things I'm not supposed to do, but and I violated an iser, but I'm still yotze. There are numerous cases, right? You know, you take your pick. You come up with all sorts of things you're not supposed to do, but you yotze if you did it. You yotze if you did it. So the question is it possible for the chachamim to say no? You're not yotze the mitzvah. Yet you're.
I guess an additional question would be, we all know that there are some cases where that's not true. Why do the Chachamim in this case...
So that's correct as well. Why would the Chachamim in this case say that you're not Yotze? And I want to emphasize a point here. Which is, it's very tempting to conceptually argue that the Chachamim pasul l'chetz of the Sukkah. And then immediately you're not Yotze. It doesn't work here. Why not? Why doesn't it work? It works if you're talking about Sukkah Ketana. With the Rif Svar Shema Yimashe, you can say, the Chachamim declared the Sukkah Psula. Maybe to say even the way you were raising the issue, since there's no way proper way in which you can use a Sukkah, Mishum Gzer Shema Yimashe, it's a Sukkah Psula. But you can't say that by a Sukkah Gedola. A Sukkah Gedola, you could have two people eating in the Sukkah at the same time, and one is behaving properly, and the other one is not. And if you say they're not Yotze, it obviously can't be a din in the sukkah. Right? In other words, the gavra did something wrong. It was an improper action. And nonetheless, if you read Beis Shammai literally, it means lo kiyamta mitzvah sukkah miyamecha. Now, in the interest of full disclosure, take a look at the Ran for 1 second. I should have put this on the Makoros.
You saw the Ran?
Yeah.
On Lamed Hey. The Ran probably learned Tosfos. I don't want to say anticipated Tosfos' question, but in the spirit of the Daf Yomi, Karyana di Igarta Hulave Farvanka, which means, I'm going to teach you this expression now, and you're going to memorize it, and you're going to use it on people when it's relevant. It's a Rashi in Parshas Pinchas. It was just in the Daf Yomi, not on that one. It was earlier in Sanhedrin, in the context of Pinchas, in Eluhan and Nisrafin, or whichever parak has the Kanaim Pogimbo. And now the Yerushalmi just had it with respect to Nebuchadnezzar, Sancheirev, his general, for somebody, who was told, Karyana di Igarta hu lave farhanka. It means the one who reads the Igeres, he's the one who carries it out. He's the executioner. Pinchas stood in front of Moshe Rabbeinu and said, Haloli Maltanu Rabbeinu, Habo al Aramis Bashuk Kana and Pogimbo. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, Karyana di Igarta hu lave farhanka. I think Rashi quotes it in Cholish. I forget the exact context. It was this week in the Daf. So Noah, now you understand why I told you. Read the Ran. Amru lo im kain hayisa noi lo kiant the mitzvah sukkim yemecha. On the right column, the paragraph that begins mas nisim, but the second part, he says,
Amru lo.
It's very, very, very interesting. I remember as a child once, I got very, very, very upset at the Seder. And I stormed away from the table. But my yeshiva education had enough to teach me that I knew I had to come back for the Mishnah. So first is machlok, some Rishonim, lo yotze yidei chova of what? Some Rishonim say of magid. And others say no. It means you're not mekayim the mitzvah, matzah, mor, and pesach, at least properly, without reciting the reasons behind the mitzvah. Think about our Bach, about sukkah, for a moment. But notice what the Ran claims here. The Ran claims, doesn't mean you're not yotze. It means you didn't do it properly. So that's all it means. If this is the way you've been sitting in the sukkah, you didn't do the mitzvah properly. Are you yotze the mitzvah? Yeah, you yotze the mitzvah. Why? Because mitaraisa it's good. Mitarabanan, it's no. You didn't behave improperly. So you didn't. Did you do the mitzvah properly? No. So the Ran already was nizher on this, and you know, dealing with Tosfos Yeshurun says lav dafka. That's the key line. I mentioned to you earlier the Rambam. The Rambam says ki'ilu lo yatzo, ki'ilu lo kiyam mitzvah, something like that. So again, the Rambam, I presume, is really, his language is kind of in between Tosfos and the Ran. I assume he's holding like the Ran. Of course you're yotze the mitzvah, but you're not doing it properly. But Tosfos makes a radical claim. So what I wanted to explore now is the power of the Chachamim to change Torah. Very briefly. This is not going to be a lengthy discussion. The primary locus of the discussion is in Yevamos. Now remember, the part that I'm really interested in is not the power of the Chachamim to be oker davar min haTorah, to tell you to violate Torah law. What I'm more interested in is the concept of the Chachamim tell you to do something not in accordance with the Torah and actually being valid by the Torah. In other words, for the Chachamim to tell you to change what we'll call a chalos, to change reality as opposed to just having you violate the halacha. That in itself is a discussion. If you want to see the most extreme manifestation of this, is not changing halacha, but changing metzias, is a Yerushalmi in Sanhedrin. As you might know, there's one area in halacha that everybody agrees, if the Sanhedrin makes a mistake, the mistake becomes correct. An error is valid. If the Beis Din rules on an area, something in Hilchos Shabbos, and then they make a mistake, and the way they know they made a mistake is because they realize later they made a mistake, then they made a mistake. They were wrong in the first place. There's only one thing. When the Beis Din makes a mistake, it becomes truth by definition, and that is Kiddush HaChodesh. Atem afilu shogigim, atem afilu mizidin, atem afilu mutayim. If the Beis Din is toa between a 29 and a 30 day month, it should have been 30 days, but they make a mistake in the Mekadesh early to make it a 29 day month, or vice versa, the Beis Din's declaration is valid. So, and the same thing is true by a leap year. If the Beis Din makes the leap year, even error, the leap year is a leap year. Now, the Yerushalmi claims, not in errors, the Yerushalmi claims the following. You know that before the age of 3 years and a day, there's no bia for a girl. Why? So the Gemara suggests, and the Rishonim say, because the basulim grow back. It's not how about Talia, but they say, before the age of 3 years and a day, the basulim grow back. I'm just going to tell you from a Matthias perspective, it's probably not correct. It's not our issue. The halacha remains the same. Before the age of 3 years and a day, it's not called bia. Just as for a boy, before the age of 9 years and a day, it's not called bia, and it's not a statement about the physical nature of the boy. The boy can have the same act of bia before the, you know, when he's 8 months, 8 years, 11 months, and 29 days. A bia that day is not halachically bia. And a bia the next day is halachically bia, with all the things that it entails. So 3 years and a day for a girl is also, it's just a halachic cutoff point. Even if the psulim don't, in fact, the mitzias grow back. Or if we want to make some people happy, we'll say, they used to grow back, but they don't grow back anymore. You still know what's fine. Okay, I won't get into that question. Okay? By the way, I will say, and I would say in defense of Chazal, it is not totally out of the question for the possibility not to grow back. It's a membrane that's broken. It's possible it can be healed. It can be surgically repaired. It's actually unfortunately done in certain cultures to protect women who might have lost their basulim because their families might kill them in honor killings. So there are organizations that engage doing medical procedures to protect women's lives in that regard. Is it possible that naturally it might close up under certain circumstances if it wasn't really fully broken? Yeah, sure. It's not the norm. Norm, the basulim. But let's accept for the moment Chazal's assumption. Let's say Nishtanu Atvan. So that before the age of 3 years and a day, if it's broken, it will grow back. If it's broken after 3 years and a day, it will not grow back. What happens if the Beis Din wasn't is not Ma'aber the Shana? Is not Ma'aber the Shana, and the girls' basulim were broken, so they won't go back. And what happens if Beis Din turns around? This is what the Yerushalmi think is talking about. And decides to be I should say it this way. If Beis Din is Ma'aber the Shana, if the Beis Din wasn't Ma'aber the Shana, the girls' basulim broken will not grow back. If Beis Din decides to be Ma'aber the Shana, the basulim will grow back. That's what the Yerushalmi says. Ekra, I think it's possible to tell him. Ekra lelokim elyon lokel gomer alai. If the Sanhedrin declares it, then that's what will be. Now, that I don't know what to do with the Yerushalmi. The Yerushalmi is a very, very powerful statement of rabbinic theology more than anything else. It's not there's no nafka mina lahalacha in reality. The din is before the age of 3 years today. It's not bia, after the day it is bia. It doesn't really matter. We don't care about the psulim. It might be nafka mina. If you see no psulim, she's a mukaseitz. It really doesn't matter. It's a very powerful theological statement, though. And that should not be lost. You have to get past the scientific question and really think about the theology of that statement. So I'm not asking for a change, the declaration of the Chachamim changing the Metzias. If you want this old joke story that's told, the Vilna Gaon apparently was very angry at the Rambam, who said there are no Shedim. How could you say? The Gemara talks about Shedim in all these cases. So I forget who said later, no, the answer is there were Shedim. The Gemara talks about Shedim. The Rambam come along and said there are no Shedim. The Shedim ceased to be. That's terrible. What's that? Is the Maral? No. Well, he's before the Gra, though.
Yeah, but the Maral is the one that says that the Rambam said that. The Rambam got away with Shedim.
Oh, he did away with them. Yeah. Okay, fine. Okay. But if you think about it, it's the same thing. It's the declaration, in a rabbinic declaration, which changes a chalos. Now, that's changing the Matthias. I'm asking for a little bit less, changing a chalos. But that's really... So, the place to look for this is in the sugya of Chachamim Okrim Davar Min HaTorah. And that's what we sort of have to want to explore a little bit. Yehuda?
Two things. First of all, I think physically it's not actually at all ridiculous, because at that age, the hymen is really thick like skin and actually does heal.
So I said it can be healed. So that's why I said it's not... I've spoken to at least one person in the field who's a Ben Torah, and when I walked away from the conversation, it's not likely. The hymen is apparently a vestigial membrane from something in utero, and it's not something that's normally going to grow back. Could something close up? You know, like whenever you have a wound, if it's small enough, it might close up on its own.
And the other thing is there's a really great cousin, Shalom, that says that
some cases, whether an animal is a trefah that falls down a pit might depend on which chacham measures the pit. And whether, and it will actually change whether the animal will die in 12 months or not.
Okay. That's a beautiful, again, you have to set aside, I know that from a scientific perspective, we are automatically going to respond and say that that's absurd. It's not my issue. We don't judge Chazal on matters of science. We have to sometimes determine the halacha. What you do in that case, I don't know. The Psulim case is an easy case. Because at the end of the day, the din is a din, no matter what. Reason aside, there has to be a cutoff point before it's not bia. That's 3 years in a day, less man de poly. If the Psulim don't grow back, in fact, if Nishkano atom and they never did, and you examine and found that way, should be mukasets, whatever the ramifications are. It doesn't matter how the Psulim disappear. If they're not there, if they're really actually gone, then she should have the status of Mukas Eitz one way or the other, which again has minor relevance. If there's no Kohen Gadol, it doesn't make that big of a difference. Yes?
Are there other instances where, like, theoretically you can be doing a mitzvah, Doraita, but at the same time there are rabbinic constraints? So, like, if you're learning Torah, but the way that you're, like, for the Rambam, the way that you're supporting yourself is you're making the community... making the community provide the money for you to learn Torah, you're still doing the mitzvah of the Talmud Torah.
Correct.
But you're doing it...
But you're a reprehensible human being, according to the Rambam.
Right. Or even, like, let's say mitzvah of Avi Avera, that, like, if it was, like, Lula, like, if you're doing the Tilat Lula, like, technically, Midoraita, you've done the Tilat Lula, but it's this principle of mitzvah of
If it's only the Rabbanon, if mitzvah is only the Rabbanon, it's Machlokas and Tosos, right? If it's only the Rabbanon, right. So correct. Or, let's put it this way. Let's say I go to a thief, and who's stolen the stuff, and I know he stole it, but I know the Bailim have Yeosh, and I buy it. It's usher to do that, you're serving as a fence. But if you did it, you're Kona, and you will be Yotzei the Mitzvah. You're a Rasha, but it's not Ma'akev the Kiyum HaMitzvah. Right? I'm really looking for the cases, not where you're a scoundrel, but where Makai in the Mitzvah, but where your scoundrelhood, or scoundrelness, actually means you're not Makai in the Mitzvah. Okay, so let's start in... First I want to give you the backdrop of the question of the Chachamim's ability to change what we do in Torah law. Okay, so the main sugya of Akiras Davar Men HaTorah, the primary sugya, is in Yevamos HaIsha Rava. I don't expect anybody to know this. But the question is, why does the Gemara talk about it there? I didn't give you enough of the Gemara. I believe the reason why the Gemara starts there is because the Gemara talks about the idea of a mamzer midrabbanon. The halacha is that if a man goes l'mdina sayam and his wife hears that he has died on the testimony of, let's say, Beirecha for the moment, and based on allowance of remarry, and then the husband comes back alive, so the halacha is teitzi mizeh mizeh. She has to get divorced from both. She's obviously min haTorah, not married to the second husband because she was an exorcist, the kiddushin aren't that binding. And Havlad Mamzer Mizel Mizel. The children she has from both, subsequent to this, well, the children she has from the second husband, who's not really her husband, and any children from the first husband after he comes back, the children are a Mamzer. Mamzer. Now we understand why from the second husband the children are Mamzer. Why? Because it's not her husband, and she's an Eishes Ish. But why are the children from the first husband after he comes back, why are they, in fact, Mamzer? If after all, she's still married to the first husband. In fact, arguably, min haTorah, she's allowed to remain married. She's a shogeges. She's an anusa. So the answer is, it's a mamzer midrabbanon. So it's on that discussion the Gemara gets into the question, well, mamzer midrabbanon, what does that mean? And can you marry a mamzer, therefore? A mamzeris. Is that?
Well, I was just thinking, isn't she also, I thought she's also a malas before.
No, only when it's the mazid, unless he's a kohen.
Oh, this is the
case. She thought he was dead.
Right.
Eid Elchon, basin gave her rishus. We didn't tell her she should have been Muteris. But the reason why, the Gemara says the reason why they were Machmir is a Knas, on a whole bunch of Knasses in the Mishnah, financial and otherwise, in this, is because the Chachamim wanted to be Mekel to allow her to be married based upon an Echad. But they only did so with the presumption, the Chazaka, that Isha Daiko Minsara, that when one witness comes forward and says, I saw your husband die, that she's going to launch her own investigation to be sure he's correct. And the only way to make sure that she does that is to make the penalties very high for her being wrong. So anyway, but Minat Torah, it should probably be treated as anusa. So unless the husband was a Kohen, she should be Muteresla. Kasser?
Why are the kids from her original husband Bamzerian?
No, the ones born after.
Oh.
After he comes back.
Oh,
after he comes back.
Yes, because she also
from
married
husband
A. Reuven went to Medina Sayan.
Right.
A came back, said he died. Beis Din said you can remarry. Okay. Reuven walked. She marries Shimon. She has children from Shimon. Reuven comes back. She realizes, oh, Reuven, I didn't know you were alive. And she goes and returns to Reuven. Certainly before she gets a get from Shimon. Now, the get from Shimon is only the Rabbanan, because she's not married to Shimon. But because she looks like his wife, Tzricha get mizel mizel. So certainly before she gets a get from Shimon, a get that's only with the Rabbanan, the Mishnah says if she goes and now back, returns to her original husband,
has children,
those children are mamzerim. But they're only with the Rabbanan, because with the Raisa, she's still married to Reuven. She's not married at all to Shimon. It was a znus with Shimon. The children she has from Shimon are mamzerim with the Raisa. Because mamzeris is not dependent upon mezid or shogeg. Mamzeris is a fact. Okay. So now, let's take a look at this sugya. Shalach le, Gail, keep you out of trouble. Shalach le. Yivamos peites amidveis. The Beis Din doesn't have the power to be oker something in a Torah. Tanya. The Ishto Ketana here means the following. If a man wants to marry off his daughter, he may do so until she reaches the age of Bagwas. We don't allow this. This is a case of Misad Rabbanan where it's Tochal. Rav says, Asala Adam Shiakadish Espito, Achit Tigdol Vitomar. But if he's Mekadeshar, then she's Mekudeshes, even though he didn't have Eira. Now, if the father is the only one who can marry a girl off before the age of Godless, is the father. Anybody else, if the father dies, and she herself goes and does Kiddushin, or mother or brother arranges a marriage, it's called Kiddushin Miyun. They invented a Din de Rabbanon, they made Kiddushin Mid Rabbanon, it's called Kiddushin Miyun because, you know how you can dissolve this marriage? He can give her a get, but before he gives her a get, she can dissolve the marriage. He goes to Beis Din and does miun. I do not want to live with this man anymore. Okay? The whole discussion comes up many, many places in Yavamos, doing miun. So Kiddushe miun is only drabanon. So either a get can dissolve it, or miun can dissolve it. So the Gemara says, by Bito Ketana, by Ish Ketana, so when does a person yoresh his sister Ketana? Now, the Gemara here is assuming, by the way, so what's the assumption? If the father had been Mekadesh Har, the husband is Yoresh's wife. How do you know a husband is Yoresh's wife? Doesn't say any such thing. It says, "V'in ein achim le'aviv u'nisatem es nachlaso l'sheiro ha'korov e'lo mi'mishpachto v'yarashosa." So, pshat in the pasuk actually is, you give his nachla to someone else. But Chazal Darshan, one shita, Unisatem es nachalas she'ero lo, and ain she'ero ela ishto. Shenemar probably she'erak susavana salayigra. So there's a drasha here that a husband inherits his wife. Normally, inheritance only goes along the father's line, mishpachasav. But a husband inherits his wife. It's a machlokas atanayim, machlokas amarayim, machlokas arishonim. Whether Yerushas habal is the raisa of the rabbanon. The Gemara here seems to be assuming Yerushas habal of ishto gedola, ishto midaraisa is the raisa. But here, because his wife is only his wife midrabanan, because she's a katana, so when is he yoreshasa, this ishto katana? So they give the answer. But katani miyas, what does the Bryce actually say? Yorsha. But vahahacha, go ahead. How is our father being yoresha? Our father's dead. So it either means her father's family, because what happens if the father's not alive, and he's supposed to yoresh someone? Where does it go? To his children, other children. And if there are no children or descendants, then it gets kicked up to his father, and which means next to his siblings if the father's father's not alive. So the bottom line here is it should have gone. I'm going to keep it simple. L'mishpacha savia. Instead, you give it to the husband. What iser is that? What's the iser?
Gezel.
It's not his money. Now some people don't know that. Lo tignovu is an iser. Some people think it's only like a hider mitzvah. You know, a mitzvah ben amufkar, you know, a chumrah. So it's not. It's an issur of lo tignovu. So if the money doesn't belong to the husband, because midaraisa is not yorish this woman, because it's not his wife midaraisa, how can the chacham give it to the husband? So the Gemara says, all right, firstly, haya is a censor's word. don't know if you realize that. That you're struck by the strange expression, hefker based in haya hefker. In some yourselves, the Tosas, you find hefker based in hefker, bay zion hey bay. Hey bays, which means? Bezman habayis. What, hefker based in hefker only works? Bezman habayis? No. It was put in, it was either self censorship or a censor put it in. Because the last thing you want a Christian looking at the place, oh, hefker based hefker. Maybe based on the size to declare the property of Christians, hefker, that's hefker too. It's just, it's maybe self-censoring. Anyway, the Gemara says, no, hefker based on hefker. And they quote two psukim. Right now, I'm not interested in the psukim. But I want to make a larger observation, a topic that I'll talk about for 2 minutes in the following way. There's a din called a Maimed Shlashtan. Maimed Shlashtan, the Gemara in Gittin says, is one of three things that is Hilcha Sabali Taima. It's a halacha, it's mekubelas, but it's not, it makes no sense. It makes no sense. What is a Maimed Shlashtan? Maimed Shlashtan means the following. I'm going to give the extreme example that the Gemara thought really made no sense, and nonetheless it applies. Morty owes me $100. I want to give Yair that money. So of course I could collect the money and I could give it to Yair. But Morty doesn't have the money right now. And I may not be around, but I want Yair to be able to get that money. So you know what I say to Morty? Tunehu li Yair, b'maimed shlashtan, with the three of us there. The person who owes the money, the person who's to receive the money, and the person who the receiver wants to transfer to. This is true both by money and it's true by an object. And it works. And now Morty must pay Yair the money. Tunehu l'ploni b'maimed shlashtan is kona. Theoretically, this could happen with a kiddushin, let's say. Not with a loan, but with a ring. Let's say they forgot the ring in Kalamazoo. And now you come to the wedding, and the best man realizes, oops, I forgot the ring. So what they could do, or let's say the person whose reshus it's in is the best man. It's not with him, but it's in his house in Kalamazoo. So the chassan has a brilliant idea. I want to give her the ring. So under the chuppah, I'm going to say to them, my best man from Kalamazoo, who might not be my best man after this wedding, I say to him, Tenehu Liplonis. And the three of them are there. The ring now belongs to her. And the kiddushin are kiddushin. That's what it says. That's the psak. The question is she mikudeshes midaraisa only midarabana? If my memory serves me correctly, it's a machlokas Rabbi Yerucham and Beis Yosef. Rabbi Yerucham says that the kinyan is only works on at the rabbanan level. Therefore, she's only mikudeshes midarabana. The Beis Yosef said, nope, she's mikudeshes midaraisa. What in effect... There's a long Avnei Milum about this. I'm not going to discuss it. But what, in effect, is the Machlokas about here? The Machlokas here is whether or not when the Chachamim have a power of Hefker based in Hefker, does the power of Hefker based in Hefker work to actually transfer title of money? Or just to take it away from someone? Does it work only to be Machker, declare it on the list? Or does the Chachamim actually have the power to put it in someone's Yishus? Now, when you think about it, when the three of us are standing here, it's not crazy to have the power for basing on the power to be mafkir and to have it to be chal. You know why? In other words, why does it even matter? This matters if tomorrow I wake up and say, Morty, don't give the money to me, it's mine and I want it. So it's not hard to understand why hefker based and hefker might work with the rice there, because I could be mafkir the money. I could write and say, Morty, I'm mochal on the loan. If you pay it to your ear, I'm mochal on the loan. I can effectively mafkir. The question is, does the takana of Beisdin, Hefker based Hefker, does that koach, which may be midaraisa, by the way, work even to be machmir, assuming it's midaraisa? But, so I'm going to assume for the moment, that, not like the Avnei Milunas Maskana, that Beisdin has the power to change the ownership of money. Not only to take it away, but to give it to someone else. But, the reason they do is because Hefker based Hefker is a principle midaraisa. What the Gemara has established here in the context, and we close with this, in this context, the Gemara has established that the power, that whenever you're dealing with a shaila of the Chachamim uprooting something min HaTorah, where the issue involves money, then it can work min HaTorah. Why? Because? Hefker based and Hefker. So let me just go back to an example I gave earlier, which could explain things. It may not be the only way of explaining things. In order to be Mekadesh and Isha, what do I have to do with Kesef? What is the rule about the Kesef? It has to be Nesina. What else? What is true about the Kesef itself? It has to be a Shavuot Puta. What else?
If I want to be Mekadesh and Isha with a Kesef, it has to be Mar. So we want to explain why if you Mekadesh a woman with Hametz in Sha'us Rabbanan, in the sixth hour of the day, why she might not be Mekudeshes, the answer could be because the Chachamim are Mafkir the Hametz. They take it away from you. And if Hefka based on Hefka works on the Raisa level, you can't be Mekadesh to Isha with this Hametz because it's not yours. Because every time you pick it up, the Hametz say, it's not yours. It's not yours. So you're basically going to be Mekadesh and Isha with something that doesn't belong to you. That's, by the way, not the only way of dealing with this particular conundrum. There are multiple ways of dealing with it. But that is one way, any situation where you can introduce the power over money into the equation, theoretically, you can use Hefka based on Hefka. We're going to see later something that see it by Hefka's Kiddushin. The Chachamim theoretically should be able to dissolve any Kiddushin that was contracted al Yidei Kesef simply through the means of Hefka based on Hefka. They can say that any Kiddushin that's contracted under the following circumstances, we declare the money not yours, and you will have Shanisha with something that wasn't yours. She's not the Kudeshes, Minat Torah. So money is a very, money, as we say, HaKesef Yaneh Sachol. So money is a very powerful tool, and it's a very powerful tool in terms of the Rabbanan's power to change Chalosis Midoraisa, provided that Hefker based on Hefker is something that can be used. And we're not done. We have more coming up tomorrow. I'd like to try to get through the rest of this and get tomorrow. Although most of you are here now, we're in Seder, I would encourage those of you...